This is the All Things Bama Podcast, powered by the Bama Central Broadcast Network. Welcome in to the All Things Bama Podcast. I'm your host, Mason Woods, and as always, I'm joined here by my good friend, Joe Gaither. We've got a handful of things we're going to get into today. First, we will start things off with a little bit of recruiting news, wrapping up the week for the Tide. Going to talk a little Bama hoops, break down exactly what went wrong against Ole Miss, and maybe preview tomorrow's road trip to Lexington. Talk a little college football playoff, maybe a little NFL talk, and that's about all I got for today. Maybe we'll see what we get into along the way. But before we do any of that, Joe, how are we doing this morning?
Oh, doing great, man. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for joining me each and every day on the Joe Gaither Show. Looking forward to seeing what you got for me today on All Things Bama Podcast. Looking forward to it. Let's do it.
Yeah, we'll start with a little recruiting talk. As it does every Friday, the recruiting rundown went live this morning at 6 a.m., so go to Bama on SI, check it out. We'll start with the unfortunate news from the week. Alabama officially loses the commitment from five-star offensive tackle Ty Haywood. This is something that we all knew it was coming for the last month or so, basically since he didn't sign on signing day, on early signing day. As it looks now, he's probably going to wind up with Michigan. He is scheduled to take a visit to visit the Wolverines this weekend. So it's probably going to be Michigan. It's a bit of a loss. I mean, he's the number four offensive tackle in the 2025 class. It's a big loss for the class. I think you're still okay. You still bring in four offensive linemen in the 2025 class: Micah DeBose, Mal Waldrop, Michael Carroll, Jackson Lloyd. So I think you still feel okay about where you stand, but it's a loss.
It's certainly a loss. Anytime you lose a five-star prospect, yeah. You can't just say it's no big deal. I do agree with your assessment that the offensive line class is still pretty good, and you went out and got Cam Dewberry out of Texas A&M from the portal as well, which I kind of roll the portal into recruiting as well, and obviously not a freshman, but I think that he's going to be a good little player. Mm-hmm. You would have loved to have had Ty Haywood on this roster. I'm partial to Jackson Lloyd, the tackle out of California, but you really it's hard to have a whole lot of hard feelings or a whole lot of bad feelings when you figure that Michigan's going to throw a pretty large monetary package to Ty Haywood, and you just kind of live and move on without him.
It just kind of is what it is.
Exactly.
I was trying to read about it this morning. Or yesterday, and his upcoming visit to Michigan, I believe, as it was reported at least, is expected to include a lot of meetings regarding NIL, regarding compensation packages and things of that nature. So, yeah, I think it was maybe a situation where Bama just got kind of outbid here. And rightfully, I think, bowed out. There's not any sense in spending so much money on one player when it can maybe be used elsewhere, and I think maybe was used elsewhere, getting some of these guys out of the transfer portal potentially. So, yeah, overall, like you said, always a loss missing out on a five-star, but I think the class is still okay as a whole. I feel good about what you did in the transfer portal. I don't think they're going to miss Ty Haywood too much.
No, not on the whole. Individually, sure, in a vacuum, you'd like to have him, but I think overall you did well recruiting. You like what you have on the roster. Realistically speaking, he's looking to try to come in there and play ASAP. Yeah. Would he have supplanted Wilkin Formby at right tackle? I don't think so.
I don't either. I've talked about it on your show, I think, a pretty good bit. I feel good about Wilkin this year. With another offseason under his belt, with another year of getting stronger, getting better in this offense, getting more comfortable with the system, another year of Taco Casa throwing it down, I feel pretty good about where this offensive line stands. And, I don't feel – I'm not going to be too hold up on this loss here. The more shocking loss of the week, though, this one I'm a little bit more upset about, and maybe not even rightfully so because it's still so early on him. 2027 edge rusher Brock Willis officially announces his decommitment from Alabama. And, he's the number four player in the state currently, number 57 player in the country. He is an absolutely sensational edge rusher. 95 tackles, 26 tackles for loss, 17 sacks in 2024. So, like, just a freak, you know, completely jams up the stat book with his name. Like I said, he's 2027, so I think this is probably more of a case of just I want to see what all my options are than I don't want to go to Alabama. But, I mean, you know, you'd always love to maybe keep that commitment.
Oh, shoot, you got to get it started. And right now you've got this bad narrative, Mason, that this staff can't recruit in-state.
This is
and
not
so
that.
This is how many now? The third or the fourth now, 2020? Because you had two guys in the 26 class commit and decommit from in-state, and now Barack Willis is now in the 27 class commit and decommit. And while certainly still early in the cycle on both those cycles, so it's not like you lost them. You had Derek Smith in the 24 in the 25 class commit, decommit, and go to Auburn. Like, there's a bad narrative out there that this staff can't really recruit in state. I think it's a bad narrative. I don't think there's much validity to it. But if you wanted to paint that picture, you could. And this just helps you add a brushstroke to that picture. Yeah. I ultimately think it's not a big deal, but it's just like not a great sign.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just one more thing that, you know, schools like Auburn, schools like other teams in the SEC that you're competing against with players can just point out and say, you know, well, you know, Alabama, they don't even like the guys in their own state. Why would you go there? Or something like, you know. It's just more ammunition for other teams, I think. So, yeah, it's a bit of an unfortunate look for Alabama to have struggled to recruit in-state like they have this early in Kalen DeBoer's tenure. But, again, this is not somebody who cut their teeth in the SEC like Nick Saban did. You know, Kalen DeBoer spent his time elsewhere. He does not have decades of time, like, of connections built up around the country that Saban did coming into the Alabama job. So I think just give it a little bit of time, have a bit of patience, and, you know, year two, year three, year four, that's where we'll really start to see how he can recruit in-state and what his, you know, ability is there.
I think,
yeah, I forgot. It is, immediately after decommitting Barack Willis, he picked up an offer from Miami. So, you know, it just kind of goes back to what I was mentioning. I think he just wants to kind of see what his options are. He's, you know, a player with this kind of output this early in his high school career, like I said, I mean, even back to his the 2023 season, 80 tackles, 14 and a half tackles for loss, 9 sacks that year. So he's just been absolutely insane in high school. So, yeah, I think he will probably be a premier talent in this class when it's all said and done, probably going to be one of those 5-star players if I had to guess, if this kind of production continues. So, yeah, he just wants to see what all's out there, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot
of teams. It's still so early in the 27 class.
Yeah. Sticking with recruiting talk, but moving off of the unfortunate news, Alabama is expected to bring some talent in on February 1st for its annual junior day. We talked about this a little bit on your show, but we can get into a little bit more here. The first one, 4-star edge rusher Kamari Brooks, the number 11 edge rusher in the nation, number 19 player in the state of Georgia, 6'4", 220, you know, kind of just your prototypical edge rusher build, not really overly long or big one way or the other, but I think he's a good kind of just all-around player. Was pretty productive last season in high school. He is down to Bama, Clemson, and Georgia. So big three contenders there. But I think, you know, getting him on campus is only going to help. Like I said, it's still pretty early for this guy, so we will just kind of have to see what happens with him. But I'm pretty excited about at least getting him to town, getting him to Tuscaloosa. Next one, another edge rusher, Dre Quinn, another 4-star. Won't actually be here for junior day, but will be here in late March. So another guy that's planning a Clemson visit, also going to be taking a visit to Tennessee. You know, just one of these highly touted edge rushers. I probably wouldn't expect Bama to wind up with both of them if they do, but, you know, maybe get one or the other. That'd be pretty cool. And then the most exciting one, though, 5-star wide receiver Tristan Keys. This is the one I brought up on your show, the Joe Gaither Show. Go like and subscribe if you haven't. Tristan Keys, the number one overall wide receiver in the 2026 class. This guy is sensational. 1,200 yards, 14 touchdowns on 58 catches in 2024, 6'2", 175, a little bit of a bigger, you know, body receiver, not exactly, you know, going to be limited to the slot or anything like that. He can stretch the field. He has the size to do so. He's not, like, overly big. You know, he's not going to just be catching jump balls every time you throw him one, but at 6'2", you definitely have the ability to go up and get some. This guy, you know, another just player that is likely going to get a ton of attention from schools all across the country, from many of the top programs all across the country, will probably have a lot of NIL money thrown at him. So it's good to see that Alabama, I think, is in the mix this early on in his recruitment. Maybe, you know, that's a good sign, getting in early. You know, it's always such a coin toss, basically, with these recruits on whether or not they're going to stick to anything. So, again, we'll just kind of have to wait and see. But very, very exciting talent going to be in town.
All right, Mason, let me spin you back to my last comment about narratives. This past year, the staff came in January, and they put together, according to 24/7 Sports, the number 4 class of 2025. Obviously, what, signing days in the real national signing days in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So that could change just a little bit, but most of the prospects are signed and enrolled. And mm-hmm. So it's almost done. You've put together a top 5 class. All right, take that part. And take what you have been studying, covering recruiting for the 26 class, mm-hmm. and now the 27 class, these juniors that you're highlighting. Narrative or not about in-state recruiting, I don't really care. The question I have is, how do you feel like this staff has done and is doing in the recruiting mm-hmm. front on the whole?
I think they did a really, really good job with the 25 class. I mean, I think you look at especially the players that they were able to flip. You know, Derek Meadows from LSU, I think he's going to be a star. Right now, I can't think of some of the other ones that they flipped. But overall, I mean, that class, I think the top end of the
Keelan Russell is technically a flip from SMU.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the top Ivan end of that Taylor class, guys, like Dejon Lee, Keelan Russell.
Yeah, Ivan Taylor is a flip from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Let's see who else I got. Justin Hill, wasn't he a flip from Ohio State? He was a flip from somewhere. Let's see. Let me keep going. A.K. Deere was a flip from Ole Miss. Marshall Pritchett, that's your boy, yeah, flip from North Carolina. Let's keep going. That's all in the class. So about 5 or 6.
So, yeah, I mean, I think you feel, or at least I feel, really, really good about the players that they were able to go get from other schools, you know, the players that were committed to other schools. And then I think you feel great about the top end 5 stars that they were able to get, the Dejon Lees, the Keelan Russells. I'm very, very excited about what this class can do. I know the narrative is going to continue to be, oh, you can't recruit in-state, whatever, whatever. But, like, it doesn't matter if the players you're getting are elite, where they come from. That point is nil to me. If you're bringing in the top talent in the country, who cares where it came from? I don't think many of these players anyway. You know, I think a lot of the argument there is like, well, they don't care about it. You know, they don't care about Alabama. It's like, I don't think a lot of them really care all that much to begin with. I think many of them who are coming to Alabama, like we've talked about before, me and you, I think off air, are viewing it as a step to the NFL. So go get the best players you can. I don't think you should try to limit yourself to in-state or anything. And I feel like they did that this class. And, you know, looking forward, it's a little light for 26 and 27. 26, you know, I don't think it's time to hit the panic button or anything yet. We're still pretty early.
One commit in 26. Zion Gibson,
yeah. And I like Zion Gibson, great player. picked Alabama over, I think it was Tennessee, Auburn, and Miami. It was a pretty funny recruitment ceremony. Did the little, like, oh, here's a Tennessee hat, open a box, Alabama balloons fly out, throw the Tennessee hat, you know. But yeah, you know,
technically 2 commits in the 27 class, so you're ahead. Jabarius Guerrero and Alexander Ward,
yeah,
wide receiver.
It's kind of too early to really make a call one way or the other on those. I mean, you know,
spin back 12 months ago, because you just said they did good on the 25 class, mm-hmm. and I would really agree with you, but the 25 class virtually fell apart at this time last year. Like, you got down to one commit who is not even still committed. You got down to running back, went to Carver. Oh, gosh, what was his name? Went to Carver, went to IMG, Turbo Rogers, Anthony Turbo Rogers, yep. Right? You got down. The class became just Turbo Rogers because of decommitments after Saban's departure. And now Turbo's not even in the class. So basically in the 12 months for DeBoer, they built that 25 class.
Yeah, feel pretty good about it, I think. I think you feel good about his ability to create and build connections, relationships with these players, the staff's ability to do that. You know, they were out on the recruiting trail this week a ton, taking visits to schools in the area, schools in the, you know, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi area. I think it's too early to really form one opinion one way or the other on this staff. I think you just got to give them a little time. And I think they have shown you in the limited time that they've been active that they can do a pretty good job. So I think you continue to maybe just try to give them the benefit of the doubt here and see how the 26th class ends up, you know, this time next year.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Let's see. More recruiting talk. Alabama did extend a few offers this week. Not really anything, you know. Again, these are guys who are 2026, 2027, 2028 players. So it's going to be a while before any of them are making any decisions. But Jeremy French Jr., 6'3" line or defensive lineman from Indiana, gets an offer from the Tide this week. Preston Carey, another four-star defender from IMG Academy in Florida. You know, as we all know, IMG is just a powerhouse for developing college talent. Another four-star defender, Trenton Henderson, one of the top players in the state of Florida, picks up an Alabama offer this week. And then this one, I was happy for this guy because Quintarius Gibson, running back from the state of Georgia, has like one other offer. It did not have many, many offers, and very, very small. He's like 5'8", 190. But he tweets out that he gets his quote, dream offer from his dream school, the University of Alabama. So happy for that kid. Maybe we'll see what he does. I imagine that's maybe one of those scholarships that now have been opened up since the limit has been increased to 105. Now that, you know, I think this guy was probably looking at a walk-on prior to that decision change, but good for him. You know, more players getting scholarships, I think, is always good. prospects that were on the radar. Alabama did wind up in the final list of schools for two elite 2026 prospects this week. Five-star quarterback Jared Curtis, number one player in the state of Tennessee, maybe Ty Simpson 2.0, who knows? And then four-star linebacker Isaiah Williams. Both of them, you know, like I said, named Alabama in their final list of schools. Both of them decided to release lists of 10 schools, which infuriates me when players do that, because it's just like there's no possible way that you were in constant contact with 10 different schools. You're talking to maybe three of them. I don't know why you have to do this list that long. but Bama, a little Bama,
leveraging schools against
yeah,
each other.
I guess that is what it is. Yeah, a little Bama hoops news. Continue to stick with the recruiting talk. You know, the top remaining 2025 prospect available names Bama in his final, and this is enough, just final 11. What are we doing here? The graphic, it looked so bad. It had 10 perfectly lined up school logos, and then the 11th one just like slapped on top. Didn't make any sense. It looked awful. But Nate Ament, 6'9", 185 pound power forward, five-star prospect, number one player in the state of Virginia. Names Bama alongside Arkansas, Kentucky, BYU, Louisville, Notre Dame, Duke, Georgetown, Tennessee, Texas, and Kansas State.
Okay. Let us know when you get a little closer, bud.
That's what I'm like. It's I don't understand. No, this that list is basically meaningless to us.
Of course,
that list gives me nothing. I mean, closer to knowing where you're going to school now than I was before I saw it.
You don't have 10 favorites. Obviously, 10 are interested in you, and you're communicating with 10, I guess. But goodness gracious, we know that there's got to be top five in that 10. So just if there's not a top five, then just wait to say anything.
Wait until you have a top five. 2026 basketball prospect also names Alabama in his final schools this week. Jalen Wingfield, a four-star, the number 92 player in the class. Another wing player. I think he's a small forward. Technically, he's 6 foot. I think he was 6'7". I want to say is what I remember seeing. But you know, same thing. Lists Alabama along Auburn, Cincinnati, South Carolina, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Mississippi State, Virginia Tech, Ole Miss, Georgia. So it's just like, folks, let's narrow these down a bit before we really come out with this information. This isn't helping anybody. This is kind of pointless to me. But now that we've gotten that, I want to move off of recruiting a bit and get into stick with Bama hoops, but move off recruiting, because we do have to talk about this Ole Miss game. I know we talked about it on your show. We haven't had the chance to talk about it here at all. We don't have to spend long on it, but, you know, it's worth mentioning because, boy, here we are 3 days later, and I'm, like, still sick to my stomach about it. It was so bad, so, so bad. Such an awful performance for Alabama. 21 turnovers, a new season high. Did Ole Miss just basically discover the recipe to beating Alabama this year?
I'm not sure. I mean, Ole Miss, Chris Beard, they like to switch on defense a lot. Switching 1 through 5 became an issue, I think, for Alabama. I think kind of confused the team on how to attack it. I just wonder if it was an effort thing, because I mean, you get beat so badly in blue collar points on blue collar night. It was just an embarrassing. Basically, Ole Miss came in here and said, came into Tuscaloosa and decided to be tougher than Alabama and beat you on the boards. Didn't give you any offensive rebounds, and you were careless with the basketball. You shot a fine percentage, but you were just extremely careless with the basketball. It was almost like you didn't respect Ole Miss's ability to beat you.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good assessment of it. That's kind of what it seemed like. You know, it felt like similar to maybe other performances this year where Alabama's kind of laid an egg a little bit. They felt like they could just walk in and beat somebody without doing anything, North Dakota. And they almost lose in this game, you know, against a much better team than that of North Dakota. They did lose. So, yeah, I'm beginning to reach my wit's end with this team almost. And I know we're only, 15 games in, 16, 17 games, whatever it is. We're not very far into the season. We're only a few games into conference play. But I just don't know what we're going to get out of them. And, you know, I would think that at this point we would have kind of had a good idea of who this team is. But I don't even think they know who they are, really. It's like there's not really much of an identity. It seems like it changes game to game. You know, one game they defend really well, and they're shooting the lights out. And then one, you know, the next game they can't defend anybody. You're turning the ball over every possession. You can't hit a shot. So I just there's like no consistency with this team from game to game. So it's really hard to get a read on them. You know, they go to Lexington tomorrow. We talked about it on the Joe Gaither show. Like and subscribe to that. But I don't have any like confidence in this team's ability to go win. I know I picked them on that show, but that was mostly just to play devil's advocate. They've given me nothing to believe in, really, with that performance on Tuesday night.
It's really hard to get out of your mind, especially when you consider how well Kentucky plays offensively. Sure, they're not going to turn you over the same way that Ole Miss did, but you're going to have to keep up, and so you're going to have to play efficient offense. You can't turn the basketball over. You need to crash the glass.
I mean, I think if anything, it's almost going to be like more difficult because, you know, Kentucky's not going to beat you up physically. They're just going to be super fast and sprinting around the floor the entire time, getting into every single passing lane that they can find. So, yeah, you really are going to have to be careful with basketball because they can get out and run a lot more than Ole Miss can.
Oh, man, it makes me feel like it's a recipe for disaster. But maybe, look, Coach Oates is a great coach. Perhaps he, you know, got the things corrected from this week, and the boys, you know, you get Darian Reed back healthy and the fellas get back on track.
Yeah, getting Darian Reed back is big. You know, we'll see what he looks like, what kind of capacity that is.
Ankle, I think, carryover from an ankle. Yeah.
So we'll see, you know, how much he's able to go. I hope he's at or very near 100% because I think Bama's going to really need his perimeter defense against Kentucky. And, you know, they have five players averaging over 10 points a game. And then they also have a really intimidating big man in the middle. So you're going to need to be able to kind of force them off their spot, I think, and force them to their second and third options offensively, I think.
Yeah, you got to be efficient with your rotations. I mean, first, you got to stop the basketball. You have to stop the ball. They're going to try to dribble drive and get downhill as well and kick. They're going to play very similar to you. So you got to stop the ball, but you've got to be aware of your rotations as well. When the ball gets kicked, where you go and who you're closing out to, it's going to be a real big deal on Saturday morning.
Yeah, the Cliff Omori versus Amari Williams matchup in the middle there. Basically 7-footer versus 7-footer. I mean, I think Cliff is what listed at 6'11", but he's right up there.
Right.
It's going to be a tough matchup, though. You know, Williams he's been a dog for Kentucky this year, averaging really close to a double-double, 10 points, nine rebounds a game. And like I said, you know, just a second ago, five players averaging over 10 points a game. This is it's a very similar team to Alabama, and that does not match up well with Alabama. I don't think plays well against teams like themselves.
Yeah, I agree. I think I just worry about the track meet becoming even too fast for Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky number two in offensive rating, 76 in defensive rating, which does make me feel a little bit better. It gives me a little bit of belief that maybe Alabama can get out and run some, but I think it's I don't know. I don't have any confidence in them right now. I do not have any confidence in this team. I don't have any reason to believe they're not just going to go out there and lay another egg on the road just like they did at home on Tuesday. Very, very, very disappointed in that performance, and it really has put a sour taste in my mouth for what I think of this team. Now, they might go out and prove me wrong, make me look stupid tomorrow, and I'll probably be right back here next week talking about how great they are and how, they could beat anybody, whatever, whatever. But, man, that was a really, really bad game. Really,
yeah, since really we bad. Will be a week, you probably want to look at Vanderbilt as well. Home against Vanderbilt on Tuesday. If you lose to Kentucky, let's just say that. You got a great opportunity to get right with Vanderbilt and LSU back-to-back sure. home games. We'll have an episode before that LSU game, but yeah. That'll be a good opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, Vanderbilt has not been – I mean, neither of those teams have been overly impressive this season. I would imagine that by the end of the year, they'll probably both be scraping the bottom of the barrel in the SEC, which, you know, is still – not horrible on the national scale, but for what Alabama needs to do, they have to win those games. So, yeah, if you lose Kentucky, you absolutely then turn around. You have to win against Vanderbilt. You have to win against LSU because you've already dropped the one to Ole Miss. Now, hypothetically, you've dropped one to Kentucky, too. That puts you in a really, really bad spot to maybe win the regular season title. I don't know what to make of this team. It's just...
I think Saturday's performance is going to say a lot. How well it will show us, you know, if they're capable of bouncing back and perform. Even if you don't beat Kentucky, play well. I think that Saturday's performance is going to tell us a lot.
Yeah, it should, you know, set up the next portion of this SEC schedule. I mean, because they've got, like you said, Vanderbilt, LSU, and then they've got another couple tough ranked matchups. I think Mississippi State's coming up. I know Auburn's coming to town at some point relatively soon. So, yeah, it's just going to be very, very hard in the SEC. But getting off of basketball, I do want to, right here, before we get out of the show, we got a few minutes here, talk about the college football playoff. We got into it on your show. I want to talk about it a little bit, just break it down some. Notre Dame, Ohio State, this is like the worst case scenario for any Alabama fan watching because it's like the two most evil teams you can think of, basically. But, you know, I think it'll be a pretty good game. I think these are the two deserving teams, unfortunately. That's kind of just the way it shook out. I think these two teams, I don't think either of them were handed this. I feel pretty, you know, I feel pretty confident that both of them earned this spot to be there.
Oh, yeah, 100%. The national championship game, while teams that maybe you're not that excited about, I mean, once you've walked the path of the playoff, yeah, you've earned it.
So, you know, I do think, you know, while Ohio State has mostly ran through everybody, obviously Texas gave them some fits last week. They did end up winning by two scores, but it was a pretty close game throughout. I think Notre Dame is probably built to beat them better than almost anyone else, just from the standpoint of they have a very, very strong defense, really, really stout run game, and they can kind of beat you. You know, they like to just grind it out and win games these slow, methodical ways like that, whereas Ohio State wants to turn everything into a track meet if they can and get out and get up by two, three scores and then just coast the rest of the game. If Notre Dame can stop them from doing that, you know, they have a chance. If Ohio State just throws a bomb to Jeremiah Smith, play one, and they go up 7-0, it's going to be a long night for the Fighting Irish.
Amen.
But Notre Dame is built to grind it out. So if they can keep it close until the fourth quarter, it's anybody's game.
Yep.
You know, I'm still going to take Ohio State, I think, but I'll probably go close. 24-17 feels like a decent score for that. Yeah, I'm going to take Ohio State in that game, I think.
I think I will as well.
Little miscellaneous news, just a couple things really quick. Amari Nyblak, former Alabama tight end, back in the transfer portal after spending a year at Texas. Grass ain't always greener, I guess. You know, 5 catches for 33 yards in 2024 for the Longhorns. Worth mentioning, he had 20 receptions and over 300 yards and 4 touchdowns for his last season with the Crimson Tide. So we'll see where he winds up. You know, we still wish him the best, but maybe you were a little hasty jumping in the transfer portal after last season, Amari. This one, and maybe this gives us a few minutes to talk about, who knows. I've seen this kind of heating up the last day or two. Moving the Army-Navy game is being talked about. I don't think it's actually been like proposed by anybody, but I saw Paul Feinbaum talking about it today. I saw some other talking heads kind of getting in on the topic. I don't actually think I hate this decision if it were to happen. That week is kind of dumb that we have a whole standalone week for this one game that never has anything to do on the national championship picture. You know, the Army-Navy game has almost never mattered for that. So let's just play it at the beginning of the year.
Well, you're having that weekend is really Heisman Trophy weekend because it's the week after the SEC championship, after the mm-hmm. conference title games, right?
So let's just move that Heisman ceremony to the week. Move it to a Wednesday, and just tighten everything up a bit. Just bring everything.
No. Don't tighten it up. Use Army-Navy as the appetizer for a playoff game.
That'd be fine, too.
Like, Friday night of that week.
Tighten that playoff up some. Sure.
Right, exactly. I don't know.
As long as Army-Navy gets away from being a standalone week where, for some reason, they want to trick everyone into thinking it's like the most important thing that happens every college football season, which, look, I love the game. It's great and all. It's a cool rivalry, but it does not matter whatsoever, the result of that game. Yeah, if we can just get that off of being this like standalone thing that gunks up the rest of the season, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I am as well. I do think it belongs at the end of the year as kind of an exclamation point on the college football season, but I don't think that the bowl slash college football playoff should be waiting on it. If you can, we talked about it earlier, but you've got to move the calendar a little bit so that you play the championship game in a timely fashion. Yeah, I'm with you. Make Army Navy that Friday night prime time.
Better, yeah, Friday night, 7 o'clock, 6:30, whatever you want to do.
Right. And then the next night is Heisman Trophy ceremony or something. Sure. Or whatever. Or Army Navy leads into Heisman Trophy ceremony.
How about you just give us the Heisman Trophy in like an email? And that'd be cool. I'm sick of watching 2.5 hours.
I never watch those. Because they're only worth watching the last 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, I've quit watching them pretty much now. Especially when it's players that like you really just don't, you know. I like, you know, Travis Hunter's a great player and all. I didn't particularly care that much.
I didn't watch
him
a second of that ceremony.
Yeah, I still haven't even watched his speech, so I don't know what he had to say, who all he had to thank.
I'm sure he said great things.
I'm sure he did. Yeah, I'm cool. We just got to tighten up this season a little bit. Tighten things up. Make the calendar a little more approachable for the casual fan who doesn't want to have to lock in for like 8 months out of the year to watch football.
Exactly.
It's just kind of ridiculous. But that was that's all I had for today. Is, you know, we'll keep it relatively tight on this one. I want to thank everybody for listening. Remind you all to follow myself, follow Joe on Twitter at @MAWoods_@JoeGaither6. Make sure you go subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you leave it a 5-star rating. We will be back next week to talk more Crimson Tide news on the All Things Bama podcast.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.